Welcome back to The Apple of Truth, Does Coraline the Book? We obviously didn't finish last time, that's what he said, but maybe we shall finish this time.
I love that this is going to be our intro. I'm Vero.
And I'm Lena.
AKA the one with the jokes. Chapter 8.
Page 107, and for you probably 104?
No, 105.
Oh, I was so close. Wow.
It's because on 104, there's a picture of stuff that I'm assuming it's the toy box.
Yes, that is most likely the toy box. My picture for chapter 8 is terrifying.
Why? 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 That's the most disgusting part of the book.
Yeah. The Miss Pink and Miss Forcible together with
in
the bad
sack.
Dogs. It's
bad.
Gross. Okay. We go into this chapter with a very rested and, to me, it seems re-nourished Beldame. And I wonder if Coraline's time behind the mirror basically took some energy from her and gave it to Beldame.
Yeah, it raises a couple of different questions. Does this mean then that Beldame fed on Coraline while she was asleep?
I think
Does it mean that she just had a rest? Does it mean that just because of Coraline's presence in the world, Beldame is already feeding on her? Like, or does she have to go through the mirror and feed on her and then leave her there continuing sleeping? What is it?
I think that it is the mirror, because I don't think that she has been able to feed off of her before, but because she locked her basically like in a pocket universe within this, that she has more power there.
So you're saying that Coraline's presence behind the mirror is the reason. It's not that she's present in the environment or that Beldame came over through the mirror and did a little plook, suck, and back.
Like a mosquito.
Yes, exactly. That's how... Exactly. Mosquito's good. Mosquito's fine.
That is disgusting. Just a little love tab. Ooh. Gross. I don't want to think
about this. Since she knows where she is, you know, and it
could be an option. It's a good point, but I don't want to think about this because I already start itching. Wah!
Anyway, what happens now is that she gets through the mirror and picks Coraline up the same way as her mom used to pick her up when she was a tiny baby. And it feels very familiar and reassuring.
This is so sad. Like, the safety that you experience as a child when you are half asleep or when you fell asleep somewhere and then one of your parents puts you to bed. Like, the utter trust that children have in that moment. And then to have it perverted like this in this moment. And Coraline, like, struggling to wake up because she realizes where she is and who is actually holding her. Oh, poor baby.
Yeah. And now we have my recipe, which I literally wrote down. Crack some eggs into a ball, whisk melt butter in a pan, mix melted butter and cheese in a bowl with eggs and whisk again, and then transfer back on a pan and make an omelette.
We have the breakfast scene with literally everything that we have in the movie. We have the creation of the omelette. Of course, there is no Jack Skeleton head hidden in here because that is a Henry Selick thing and not a Neil Gaiman thing. And we have the challenge to play a game. But within the parameters that are being set up for the game, we get some information that we did not have in the movie, which makes it once again so much more terrifying. Because Coraline asks Beldame to swear, and Beldame swears on her own mother in a grave where she put her. And when she crawled out, or when she tried to crawl out, she put her back again. Wow.
And somehow she thinks that that's an acceptable thing to swear on. Huh.
I mean, in her world, it probably is.
Well, then Coraline agrees with me when it comes to this. So she makes her to swear on something else.
And she swears on her good right hand.
That she does, which is really fun.
Foreshadowing.
I truly believe that
this is the only reason why in the end the right hand is what follows Coraline over to the other world. Because it is sworn on that hand. So
yes, absolutely.
She has to lose it
because she breaks that swear. She breaks that promise. Yeah.
Perfect.
And then I love that Coraline is trying to be cunning at this point. She starts looking for the sauce and she has no idea what she's looking for. And she tries to con it out of Beldame.
She is so smart about it. Another thing that I prefer so much about book Coraline compared to movie Coraline. Movie Coraline always seems to need help. And Book Coraline is so self-sufficient and so smart and so, fuck, what is the word?
Individual.
Savvy. She is so yes. savvy.
Yes. She is also in the movie, she gets a hint. And
yes.
I mean, it's kind of nice that in the movie she kind of tricks her into getting that. But here, she doesn't need it.
Mm-hmm.
She tries to get the size of the soul out of
her,
but...
She does need a hint, but something else does give her the hint, because she starts looking around the house. And once again, the Adder Stone is so much more relevant to everything, because we have this moment in the mirror where she sees herself, and this is what triggers her to take out the stone.
Mm-hmm.
And then the stone gives us a light to her room, and then it's like, ah.
Yes, but she's still ignoring the advice that she's gotten in the last chapter, and she is not looking through it. She's just looking at it.
I think she's not remembering that fully, because she was already yeah. half asleep, and she is still
yeah,
a child.
Yeah, whatever.
Come on, she's fucking 11! How smart were you at 11?
So smart.
Mm-hmm.
I was smart enough to, like, avoid bullies and dangerous people. Don't you give me that look.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. I was very self-sufficient when I was 11. This is why me and Coraline are basically the same person, even though she is better in every aspect of her being. I'm like a shadow Coraline. I'm like a almost Coraline.
Mm-hmm.
I should change my name legally to almost Coraline.
Almost Coraline. That is a great mm-hmm. word. I like that.
Yes.
Good. No, so she goes into her room following the lights, and then she basically starts tossing about the entire room to look for what might be the soul.
Yeah.
And it is very, very funny to me, because like she empties out the toy box and all the toys are like creeping and crawling away from her.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, we get like the leftovers that every child has somewhere.
Yeah, at the bottom of a toy box, there lies the things that are at the bottom of every toy box.
And then she finally remembers the whisper behind the mirror. That she's supposed to look through the Adder Stone. And she does that. And I really appreciate that when she realizes that she sees something through it, she does not remove it from her eye, so she doesn't lose the connection, because she doesn't know how long it will last.
Oh, yeah, that's very cool.
So it's really smart.
Yeah, she's very smart, as we have established multiple times.
It bears repeating.
Now, this is the moment when I got really lost, because I know at some point in the book, very recently, she has decided to change into her own clothes, because she wants to only look for these in her own clothes and not the clothes that she was given or
this is
she
the moment.
Found in the other
this
world.
This is the moment, because she is in her room and she finds the first soul, and then she's like, okay, I do not want to continue this in her clothes. I want to continue it in mine.
Okay, because that explains it, because I couldn't for the life of me find it. I started panicking and there was no keywords on the searches, and then I was trying to find the PDF and that didn't work out, but I found all the other stuff that is in the bonus. So she decides that she doesn't want to do this in her clothes.
Her fingers closed about something smooth and cool. She snatched it up and then lowered the stone with the hole in it from her eye and looked down. The grey glass marble from the bottom of the toy box sat dully in the pink palm of her hand. She raised the stone to her eye once more and looked through it at the marble. Once again, the marble burned and flickered with a red fire. A voice whispered in her mind, "Indeed, lady, it comes to me that I certainly was a boy. Now I do think on it. Oh, but you must hurry. There are two of us still to find, and the Beldam is already angry with you for uncovering me." "If I'm going to do this," thought Coraline, "I'm not going to do it in her clothes." She changed back into her pajamas and her dressing gown and her slippers, leaving the grey sweater and the black jeans neatly folded up on the bed, the orange boots on the floor by the toy box. She put the marble into her dressing gown pocket and walked out into the hall.
And this is where my anxiety begins.
Why?
She puts the marble into her dressing gown pocket.
She does not have any other pockets.
Yes, but like, it's so gonna fall out.
No, it's not. It never happens.
It never happens in the book, but it's gonna fall out.
That did not really bother me, because depending on the pockets that you have, there are deep pockets where nothing will ever fall out. Quite the opposite.
Well, I wish I had your pockets, because every single time I lose things out of my pockets constantly.
Maybe it's a male robe and that means the pockets are bigger.
Do you mean that the pockets are functional? Oh, I didn't think of patriarchy. I should have. I mean, it is written by a man. He doesn't know anything about female pockets.
Yes, of course, because he's not familiar with actual female pockets. He makes them big enough that everything fits in it and nothing falls out.
Yes.
Da-dum. Okay. Nice. We're sorry, Neil. When she leaves her other room, the other mother is extremely upset and actually is hurting and attacking her with the wind and the stings and everything. And Coraline shouts at her to play fair, and it works.
Somehow it works. I'm still not sure how.
I think that because the Beldame agreed to the game, she is bound by certain rules.
Yes, but she clearly isn't bound enough to actually honor the result of the game.
Well, that is a very, very interesting question, and we're going to talk about it when we get to it.
There is a few different points of view that we can chat about there. But for now, Coraline decides...
The second wonder is the theater. Yes. Ugh. But it looks so different now because it is completely derelict and broken. We do find the flashlight, the torch, right in the beginning.
Yeah.
And we do have the bat dogs. But once again, it is so much more disgusting and gross than what we see in the movie. Oh.
Yeah. So I love the descriptions of the soul colors, actually. So I have written down the first soul is the color of fire and tulips because of the story.
The one last memory he had is about tulips.
And the next soul is going to be brown, as rich and bright as polished cherry wood, which is beautiful. It's a really nice warm color. And that's what I'm going to focus on at this part of the book, because everything else gives me the creeps. And this was actually one of the most difficult parts of the book for me to read and reread, because I just can't. Every single word, like every other word in those pages, is triggering to me, and I choose not to go through that.
Then I shall do it for you. We have the bat dogs that are there, and it is horrifying, but it is nothing compared to the sack stuck to the end of the room on the wall, in which the actresses are intertwined. It is described in such vivid detail that it is hard to not be completely freaked out, but on top of that, we also have a much more scared Coraline than we ever had before, and especially than we ever had in the movie.
I don't blame her.
Terrified of this. And still, she keeps telling herself that she is brave, realizes that it's true, and she soldiers on. So she survives this. She manages this. We still have basically the same thing as happens in the movie, with her sticking her hand in the sack, gripping the marble, ripping it out, then being called a thief, which is traumatizing in its own, and then being chased by the bad dogs and making her way out of the theater.
She comes to a realization as she's leaving that the sisters are attached to the thing and they cannot follow her. They can't move from the place. And the dog bats aren't actually hurting her. So that's how she gets through this and gets out, because she puts reason into this terrifying situation, and she's right.
Yeah.
And it's something that's going to follow her for the rest of her quest, because I think this is the moment where it's the first time where she actually reasons her way out of a situation in a way that is going to be damaging for Beldame. In a way where she consciously makes a decision, calms herself down, and is being truly brave and isn't as afraid anymore.
I feel she also did that to herself in the mirror, because she fights down the sob there.
Yes, but she doesn't actively pursue anything at that point. At this point, she's actively moving forward.
Because he or she now has the quest. In the mirror, she didn't have the quest yet.
Yeah.
But so she makes it out, and the ghost children are telling her to run away, even though she has only found two of them. And it is not made completely clear if all three ghost children are telling her to run away, or just the two she already rescued.
So she has rescued the boy, and she's rescued the girl with the bonnet, right? At this point.
I think so, yeah.
Based on the colors. So then the fae is going to be the blue one. That's going to be the next one. But before we get to that,
we go to our next chapter.
Luckily, this chapter is over.
Mm-hmm.
And we never have to talk about it again.
Now we go to something that, in my opinion, is much worse. And there is a reason why it's not in the movie. Because now we go to chapter 9.
Yeah.
And chapter 9 is something completely different.
It is.
This is a detour in the mission.
Mm-hmm.
This does not result with finding a soul. This is basically a filler, but it is also, to me, the most traumatizing. Because the other father turning into a maggot, a ginormous, bloated, maggot-like creature, where Coraline is the one to rip off the eyes,
yep,
is utterly horrifying. It is utterly fucking horrifying. But we're still gonna have to go through it.
To be honest, I found the previous chapter much more traumatizing.
This is mine. This is for me. This is horrifying.
Okay, so Coraline gets out of the theater and the mist is rising around the house and is the kind of a mist that has no shapes or shadows behind it. So the nothingness is coming for the house, essentially. That's how I understand that.
Yeah, everything is turning more abstract because the world here is not falling apart as much as it is becoming less real.
Mm. And Baldam is waiting for her outside.
And it makes perfect sense to me that Baldam is here trying to intervene in a way because she already managed two of the four things that she is supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So if Baldam wants any chance of stopping Coraline, she needs to intervene. So this makes perfect sense.
Absolutely.
To not wait until Coraline has all three souls.
She says, you know that I love you.
And Coraline knows it to be true.
She knows it to be true. The thing that the voice says, the voice is coming from everywhere. It's not just coming from her. It's coming from the mist, the fog, the house, the sky. It's coming from every single thing there, which just is a further proof of everything that is in there being Baldam.
Baldam made the house, but it also is her.
Yes. So she's been walking through her insights the entire time.
Well, no, but
the cone was hers.
No, but a spider creates the web out of stuff that comes from her insight. And in the same way,
gross,
Baldam created everything from her inner workings. And now she is basically reabsorbing everything.
And what we get here is that Coraline knew this to be true. But she also knew that the way she was loved as a possession. She was loved as a tolerated pet whose behavior is no longer amusing.
Which is a great way to describe. I love this.
It's perfect. It is one of those amazing moments when you are told a few words and because of that you now fully understand the entire situation.
Yeah.
Love that.
We have more back and forth and Baldam leads Coraline to believe that this is where she needs to go next. So we get the key to the room or to the other apartment.
The key is still a little wet when she takes it from her mouth and gives gross. Gross.
And then we get the trapdoor and we have the going down, the looking through the stone, but there is nothing that is glowing. And then we have an utterly heartbreaking interaction with the other father turned maggot and Coraline. Because she straight up asks him if this punishment is because he talked too much. He told her too much. And it is.
Because she's smart. She knows what's up.
But also, this hurts her more on an emotional level because of this. Because now she feels a certain level of guilt, you know?
I mean, yes. Yes, she feels guilt, but she also, I think, understands that he was made by Baldam and then she put everything into him. And it's not Coraline's fault, the same way as it's not his fault. I think that she understands the
situation. But you can still feel guilty about something that is not your fault.
That is very true. Anyway, she is incredibly courageous at this point because if I was Coraline, I would never walk through the trapdoor in the first place. But if I did, I would leg it the second I would find the body. I would not wait for him to get up and turn around or anything like that. I'd be like, nope.
We already established that Coraline is smarter and braver and better than all of us.
She's trying to find if there's a soul hidden there somewhere. Because, you know what? She's there, she might as well look, right? He says, there's nothing down here, nothing but dust and damp and forgetting.
Which is sad.
Yeah, at that moment, Coraline, turn around, walk away, please. Please do it. She does not do it. Spoiler alert. She stays.
Yeah, because she still has empathy and care for the poor of a father. And they keep having an interaction, and then he basically succumbs to the will of Beldame. And
he fights
turns
it.
Fully. Yeah, but he succumbs to it in the end.
Yeah.
And he turns fully and he starts attacking her. And she does the only thing that she can, which is she blinds him, quietly tiptoes away from the position that she was at, and then she manages to escape. It is terrifying. Fucking terrifying. I don't blame them for not having this in the movie.
I mean, we have a version of this in the garden.
No, because the father never turns on her. The father never attacks her like that.
Not like that, but there is a version of that, a very much PG version of that in the movie.
But the intent is so different that it makes this a whole other shebang for me. Because the father in the movie loves her till the end and rather self-sacrifices than fight her.
I think that this father also loves her, but he is just not strong enough.
Yeah, but in the end, it doesn't matter why, it only matters that.
You just talked about intent, so, you know. But anyway, she gets out and the house is starting to lose even more shape now.
Yep, it becomes more and more abstract. Basically, we are now a painting on a piece of paper.
Right.
We wrap up the disturbing chapter 9 and we go into chapter 10, which is on page 139 for me.
139? You're so fast. Take a guess. So my chapter starts on 134.
You have Popinski.
Bubba.
Oh, that is disturbing.
Bubba.
I have the cat killing the rat at the end of this chapter.
I wish. She decides, out of her own will, to go all the way up to the top flat.
Because she realizes that Mr. Bobinski's place is going to be the last place.
Has to be, because it's inside the house,
yeah.
And she's been everywhere else. So this is actually a really nice moment when we get a little bit of a background on the OG Mr. B.
Mm-hmm.
Because she shares in her inner monologue the one time that she went to visit him back when she was still at home with her mom. And she speaks about the smell. And it wasn't an unpleasant smell. It was unpleasant smell for her because it smelled like food that she wouldn't like.
She's a very picky eater.
Yeah, she is. Again, I feel with her. We had this discussion last time or the time before, at some point anyway.
Yes.
And she is being very kind at this point because it's not his fault. It's not a him problem, it's a her problem. Because she doesn't appreciate those specific smells.
Hmm.
But she understands that that's on her. While in here, the smell is just unpleasant.
Yep.
So essentially, again, this is a moment where this world was taken from her emotions, her experience, and it was placed there from her perspective. But she has changed her perspective, which is interesting because she's a developing.
Once again, this experience is helping her to grow. So it might also just be all in her imagination where she reevaluates her experiences.
Okay, oh, so
this is so fed up with me.
This is the one time you get the pass today. You said yesterday that you're going to only say it once and then you immediately said it again like 5 minutes later.
You made such a great point that I had to counteract it. It's very simple.
Okay, whatever. You just hate my points. I see that now.
Yeah, I hate that it defeats my point. So I had to challenge it.
Now we get the third rat song, which is the creepiest of them all. We have eyes and we have nerves. We have tails, we have teeth. You all get what you deserve this when we rise from underneath.
It gives me Gollum vibes. I'm sorry.
Gollum?
Yep.
Gollum.
We have
nerves. Oh, my precious.
What you deserve this.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
No, but this like straight up gives me Gollum vibes.
Yeah.
And it is disgusting and horrifying and creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And now we meet Mr. Bobinski in his big form. And we basically get the same monologue, which is great. Like, once again, I love this. The content makes sense.
So this is the extended version. This is exactly the same, plus some extra stuff.
And we also get more reply from Coraline that once again showcases her growth and her understanding. Because one of the things that he tells her is that she would have everything she wants all the time. To which Coraline explicitly states that getting everything you want is not something anyone actually wants.
Mm-hmm. That's a very, mature thinking.
I would not call it mature. I would call it...
experienced.
Yes. You need to have a bit more experience because there are people who are much older than Coraline who have not reached this conclusion.
Yeah. Also, just before the conversation starts, she sees the shape and she realizes that she's not actually frightened.
Yeah.
Because she understands that this is all illusions. This is also the moment where she thinks of the snow globe. Because all the illusions, that's all she does. All Beldam does is creates illusions and twists reality. And this, the snow globe was the one thing that was out of place. And finally she realizes this is where her parents are.
And that she should have realized it earlier.
Yeah. I'm very proud of her because, again, it's a very, I don't want to say adult thinking because it not every adult is capable of that kind of a thinking. But it's very experienced and mature kind of thinking.
Yeah. We're here for her. And her evolution. Now we get the falling apart with Bobinski not being a man, but a bunch of rats and everything. And we have the looking through the stone, seeing the glowing thing, losing the glowing thing, running after the rat, losing the rat, falling down, skinning her knee. But she does not throw the fucking stone. So it is very similar, like in the movie, but she does not let go of her most important asset, which... Yes.
At this point of the book, she realizes that she only made it this far because she had the stone on her from the beginning. So she's being actually smart.
Yes.
She doesn't have a flair for the dramatic.
Yeah. Also, she knows that she is dependent on the stone.
Yeah, exactly. She knows that unless she has the stone, she will not make it out of there alive.
And so she tries her very best, but she does lose and she is devastated. But just as in the movie, there is the cat.
Yes. And two things. First of all, as I said before, I have marked down the colors of each of the soul. This one shone blue-white like any star. So my presumption is that this is going to be the Fae. But I love the cat. But I am a little sad that I didn't get to read this without the knowledge of the cat being coming to the rescue. Because at this point, that entire chase had very little meaning to me. I know that this is supposed to be really intense and she is on the verge of losing it. This is the point where she is really, really, not because she's not capable enough, but because she just physically cannot catch up with this rat.
Yeah.
And it's really terrifying that she's going to lose everything because of this. But when I know that that's not the case, it's just lost. I lost all my interest in this chase. I kind of blew through it. It's like, yeah, I got it, I got it. She's running really fast, whatever. The cat.
Aww, that is sad. Yeah, next time we definitely do it the other way around.
I mean, it's always better.
The cat shows up, has killed the rat, saved the soul or the lost heart or whatever. And that is not the end of this chapter because this is also the moment where we learn that all other exits are now flat and the cat cannot leave. And I don't think that in the movie it is made this clear that from this moment onwards, the cat needs Coraline just as much as Coraline needed the cat right now.
Yep.
This has turned now into a fully symbiotic relationship. Before that, the cat was completely independent and was helping Coraline. But now the cat needs Coraline just as Coraline needs the cat.
See, there is this moment of Coraline becoming extremely selfless. And I think this is one of the peaks of her development where she tells the cat, you go, you save yourself, I'll meet you back home. And at that point, the cat wants to go, but no longer can. And that's how we find out. And the way it's described, the realization for the cat that there is no way out. The cat that is always the most independent creature on the planet. The cat that always has their own plan, just in case.
Yeah.
He no longer has that. So the fact that he is suddenly scared to death because he has to depend on this little girl and because he doesn't have anything else.
I don't think he has ever been trapped before, and this is the first time in his life that he is actually trapped.
It's a very powerful moment.
Aww. And it's completely missing in the movie, and this is one of my things that I miss, this level of relationship. So yeah.
The choice and the necessity of this relationship.
Yeah. And this ends chapter 10 and we're now in chapter 11.
So Coraline pushes through the door. She kind of expects to go through it as a paper, because that's what it is at this moment. It's just a random drawing of a house.
A scribble.
But she actually opens the door, and it looks like the inside of the house maybe isn't perfect, but it's still holding up, unlike the outside.
Yeah.
So that is another proof that the magic works much better on the inside, and the outside was never as important.
This is the center of Beldame's power, so everything is stronger here. We have the showdown at the middle of it all, in the thick of it all, at the heart, basically. Because we are fighting for Sacred Hearts, so we are now at the heart of it. Haha, I'm so smart.
In the drawing room.
But everything that now unravels is extremely similar as it is in the movie, with the confrontation, with the vermin friend comment, the my parents are hidden behind the door to the hallway, the throwing the cat at Beldame, the taking the snow globe with her. All of this is extremely similar, but there are slight changes because we get all the inner monologue and motivation of Coraline. Because the way, for example, she unhooks the cat from her shoulders, she is preparing to throw the cat much longer before it actually happens.
The decision to throw the cat was made much earlier.
Yeah.
She knew what she had to do the second when she realized that she needed to Beldame to unlock the door.
Yeah.
And she is working towards the goal much more deliberately.
Yeah.
It's not a spur of a moment decision. It's not, well, I'm just going to throw a cat and hope for the best. It is very much deliberate and calculated and, dare I say, smarter.
Yes. Also, the awareness of, I cannot even think of the snow globe if I want to be able to take it without Beldame noticing it.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes even thinking of something gives it away.
Yeah. I mean, we have learned throughout this book that Coraline is actually an incredible actress.
And also that she has read a lot. Like, a lot of these things that she just knows are things that you will learn in stories that you have read as a child.
Yeah, fairy tales and all.
Hmm? Exactly.
Not only dragons exist, they can be slayed.
Exactly. And she knows that.
I said that and I immediately got chills.
It is a really good line. So we have a big difference here now that the entire confrontation happens. The cat throwing, the door is open, la 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 la. We are in the corridor. We are in the hallway. And she is trying to pull the door shut. And the ghost children are there helping. And so are her parents.
Mm-hmm.
And that is so weird. Because why are there ghosts of her parents? How does that work? Her parents did not have their Sacred Hearts stolen. They should not be ghosts.
But they are with her.
They are with her, but different, you know? So this is my one tiny, tiny quarrel with the book. I want a differentiation between the ghost children and my parents are with me and are giving me their strength.
I think the idea behind this point, is not that the ghosts of the children are there or that the ghosts of the parents are there, but it's more about the mental strength that she has. And because she has saved all of these people, she has the mental strength of all of these and the moral high ground of all of these people on her side. And the same way the door is closing really, really slowly and it's really, really heavy and she has to say something. It goes, shut, she thought. And then she said out loud, come on, please. And at that point, she felt the door begin to move. So it feels like she has to negotiate with the door.
Words have power in the fey world. You need to say things to make things.
It just feels like it's not just a random, I have somebody else helping me pull the door close. I feel like there's more to it from my understanding.
I agree with that. I still want the ghosts and the parents to read differently.
Okay.
But I agree with you.
I understand what you're saying, though. Because I was thinking about the same thing. It is a big difference that the fact that they're there. And in a way, I understand why they're not there in the movie. Because I think it would be more confusing.
Yes.
Especially since this is more aimed at, like, children, essentially. Like, it's easier to understand the movie than it is the book. Or it's less creepy to watch the movie than it is to read the book, which I think that we can agree on.
Yes.
So it feels like it requires you to really pay attention and really try to understand everything that's happening in more detail in the book. And therefore, parents can be there if you look at it from that perspective.
They can be there and they should be there. I just want them there differently. That's all.
Yes, you're right.
The door closes and we get the cutting off of the right hand as well.
But we don't really know what it is at this point.
What do you mean? Yeah, but it still happens and then like it's the same as in the movie and everything. And
yes.
So the door is closed and we now have to make it through the corridor. And the corridor is so much worse. And I never thought it would be possible that something is worse than a literal fucking column.
Mm-hmm.
But the corridor is warm and furry and breathing. It's a living thing.
And then it feels like someone's mouth.
Yeah, it is so much worse.
What is it?
She is inside an old and ancient evil.
I don't want to know. I really want to know what it is, but I don't want to know.
So we're not putting that on the question list then?
Put it on the list. I want to know, but I don't want to know.
Okay, so I will ask and then I will not tell you.
Depends what's the answer. Is the answer going to be, well, you're going to have to read about it in the Coraline 2 that's coming out next year and I've been working on it for 10 years.
It would be so fucking funny. Imagine if Coraline grew up and had children of her own and then it all happens again.
It can happen. She's not in the same house, is she?
We had a debate. There's just one door. Does that mean it can only be in one location or that there is just the one door? I say there's options.
No.
Dear listeners, send us Coraline fanfiction, please.
Ooh, interesting. Fan fiction. Hmm.
So we make it out of the corridor and we are now in the real world drawing room. And very,
she
very different to the movie, the parents are not there right away. But Coraline and the cat instead bundle up on one of the chairs. They curl up together and they fall asleep.
So cute. Before she falls asleep, she's looking outside and the sky had never seemed so sky and the world had never seemed so world. And
it's
I love
so
that.
It's so good. It's so good.
It's such a great sentence.
And now we go into the penultimate chapter, which is my shortest when it comes to notes.
I have some notes on this.
I have 3 notes, so you bring us through this.
This is basically the dinner and a picnic chapter. There's a lot of food, again, involved in this specific part of the story. So they do have a nice dinner, even though it's a recipe. Coraline really enjoys it because she's really appreciating
being
there.
Well, it's pizza.
It's pizza and has weird stuff on it. And
so it's not a recipe as such, but it is pizza that her dad made. So it is doughy on one end and too hard on the other. And there's pineapple on it. And I want to go on record. I say pineapple on pizza is amazing. And also, if you want to try weird shit, put banana on it.
Okay, banana may be a little bit too far for me, but pineapple on pizza is incredible.
Have you tried banana on pizza? If not, you don't know what you're talking about. I tried it. It's amazing.
I can imagine.
Nope. It tasted different than I thought.
I mean, first of all, her mom finds her in the drawing room.
Yes.
And she gives her a bit of a shit about the scraped knee and stuff like that. And Coraline's like, oh, it's fine. I just tripped and fell.
We also learn that the cat ran out of there the moment the door opened. And Coraline goes, he probably had business to attend to, which I appreciate.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cat, obviously.
For me, the most important difference in this moment is that Coraline, not in this moment and at no other moment later on, ever tells her parents. Because in the movie, she's like, oh, all of this happened and I rescued you. And, la, 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 la. And in the book, she does not even allude to it. She hugs them tight. She tells them that she misses them or that she missed them. But that is it. She never confronts them.
Because she doesn't have a need to in the book. She never told them about this in the first place because in the movie, she comes in and out and she keeps telling her mother about what's happening.
In the movie, she's a fucking chatterbox.
Yeah. Well, as we have learned, in the book, she's much more closed off and she's much more just happy being by herself.
Very introverted.
Yeah. But anyway, she hugs her mom and she goes to her room and she takes a shower and she changes and she puts the key out of her pocket and on a string and puts it around her neck and hides it on her t-shirt.
Smart girl.
Which, very smart, but also seems like a temporary solution.
Because
which
she
obviously
doesn't know
we're gonna get
yet.
That confirmed. Well, I mean,
she doesn't
way.
Know. She might feel it subconsciously, but only when we get the interaction with the 3 ghost children does she realize that this is not over.
Yeah. No, she heads off down to the dinner and then she does the pizza and...
Yes, peeling off pineapple off her pizza.
It was a homemade pizza. And I mean, to be fair, I love pineapple chunks. But that wasn't the only thing that was on the pizza. There were slices of green pepper on it, which doesn't seem that she enjoyed.
I mean, green pepper is the worst pepper. Red pepper is a superior pepper.
It's a pepper. It tastes almost the same.
No, 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 no. Green pepper is bitter and red pepper is sweet.
What?
Yeah.
Sha. And it has also little meatballs and obviously the pineapple chunks, but she didn't eat the chunks, which disappointing. That's the one time I'm disappointed in her, because pineapple on pizza, all four.
Same. Don't add us.
Good.
We know we're right.
We are correct. That is true. And after that, she goes to sleep. And as she does in the movie, she puts the marbles under her pillow. And again, I'm here with, I am glad that we are making it a soul rather than an eyeball. Because putting three eyeballs under your pillow is a little disgusting.
I mean, it's representations.
Yes, but also no.
Yes.
It's metaphysics. A ball and it's an eye.
It's metaphysics. But the dream itself is very similar to what we see in the movie.
Is it?
Yeah, the content is pretty much the same.
They have a full day together. They just hang out. They play games. They eat food. Then play games. They
Yeah, it's longer, dessert. But the content is the same.
Yeah, I mean, yes. Again, extended version.
Yeah.
We learn a little bit more about the kids again. And one of the children is a fae.
Yes, and so does my picture show, actually.
I know. And what I love about this is there's a little note in the book where it says, well, it looked like the third one had wings, some people wouldn't even notice it, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, but like the picture in my book, you see the fae child flying over the other two children.
It's adorable. It's really beautiful illustrations. It's just really nice that they get to hang out, because it's like saying thank you, little party. And the one thing that kind of like makes me angry with the children is it's different to the movie. In the movie, they straight up tell her that the key is in jeopardy and she needs to sort that out. While in the book, they're like, oh, 'tis not over yet, miss. You need to do other stuff. It's over for us, but not over for you. And she's like, well, what's going on then? Tell me what to do. And they're like, oh, we shan't. Bye.
That's how they were raised, probably.
Like, goodbye.
But in the end, they do tell her.
No, they don't.
Yeah.
They say, be wise, be brave, be tricky. She is all of those things. But they just disappear into the night. They just disappear and don't tell her anything. Like, the only information that she gets is that it's not over yet. You need to be careful.
And also, take comfort in this. Thou'rt alive. Thou livest.
Okay.
Yeah, as long as you're alive, you can fight.
Yeah, so they just don't tell her anything.
But I feel like they can't.
How?
Fairy rules.
I mean, only one of them is a fairy.
But all of them entered a contract with a fairy. We pretty much agreed that Beldame is some kind of she.
Yeah, I suppose. But they are away from her now, so technically, I don't know, we could argue this.
That's not how fae contracts work.
Anyway, they're being very vague, unlike in the film where they straight up tell her.
Mm-hmm. And now they are free and happy and gone.
Mm-hmm.
And Coraline wakes up. And now that she is awake in the real world, she ends up actually seeing the hand.
First, she thinks it's some sort of a five-legged rat.
But then she realizes what it is, and then everything clicks into place. And so she devises a proper plan of how to get rid of it, instead of just planning to drop the fucking key down the fucking well like she does in the movie.
Yeah, well, she doesn't devise anything just yet. But yes, she knows that the hand is out there, and the timeline is much more stretched out. So at the end of this chapter, she is standing in the door, and the hand scatters by her into the darkness outside.
True, she doesn't devise a plan just yet, for some reason. And I put my, she devises the plan in this one because the chapter was so short for me. I needed to put something there. This leads us to the final chapter.
It is indeed the final chapter, the last one.
Which for me starts on page 179 and ends on 192.
Your booksies is longer than minesies.
Yes, of course. That was obvious ever since I overtook you in page numbers.
Well, I start this chapter on 171 and it goes until 185.
Good. And the first note that I have is that the marbles are broken open. just as the ball thingies that she collects in the movie are. And here we get an explicit statement that she saves the shards, which I really appreciate.
Yeah, because they're important to her. They're something that she managed to do on her own, and she's achieved this incredible thing, and she helps these children. I'm really proud of her, and I think that she's proud of herself.
Rightfully so. Another thing is that here we have an acknowledgement that Coraline's parents are actually missing the 2 days.
Yes.
In the real world, but they never realize it, apparently.
Because they're one of those people that don't really care about time. Like, is it Monday or is it Saturday? Who cares?
Which also explains why the fridge was empty previously.
Yeah. And it also explains a lot about Coraline, because I kind of feel like the way she is comes with the territory if you have parents like that.
Yes.
Her imagination, for example, running free like that, it's something that if you have very stickling parents, it's really difficult to develop because, you know, you don't have the freedom. Sometimes, not always, obviously.
But also her ability to just run with things must come on a certain degree with having to just run with things with this kind of parents, you know?
Yeah.
One of the biggest differences here is that we get a second tea leaf reading that is now the one that gives us the hand. Because in the movie, this once again is combined into one. And here it's two separate sessions.
Yeah.
We also get the Bobinski interaction.
Bobo! But the thing with the tea leaves,
who are so very scared.
The tea leaves are great because we find out that apart from the hand, everything's dandy. Everything's fine. Everything's back on track.
Yeah, but the hand does so much damage, it even cuts one of the dogs. It literally hurts Hamish.
I know, and that is true. But also, this gives us that if the hand is dealt with, it means everything's fine. There's no other danger lurking in the shadows besides the hand.
Right, now, who knows what happens in 2 years when she goes there for another tea leaf reading?
Well, yeah.
You know, when puberty hits fully.
Oh, God. Teenager.
Yeah, teenager.
Also, I just...
Get it? We did not acknowledge my pun. Teenager.
I missed it. Oh, ha, 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 ha.
Thank you. Now I feel validated.
Good. I am happy to get you validated.
After the tea leaf reading, we have the Bobinski interaction with the mice are so very scared. And we get the information that the dog got cut by the hand.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the moment where Coraline starts to like properly implement the plan.
Because she is basically needing to sleep with one eye open. Especially then the whole thing with the hand scratching on the window happens.
Oh, scary shit.
And there's like actual like scratch marks on the outside of the window. So it's not just that she's trying to get in somehow, but she is actually making damage. And just because Coraline noticed it and doesn't catch it when it runs away, it doesn't get through the glass. So she realizes at this point, there's no way around it. She needs to do something actively about it.
And so she devises a plan.
Same way she made a full-blown decision of going back because there was nobody else to deal with it and just couldn't stay the way it was. Now she makes the active decision of there is nobody else to deal with his hand. Nobody else knows it's here. Nobody else knows why it's here, except for me.
Mm.
I am the only person who can do something about it.
Yeah.
Brave.
And I like the plan. I really like the plan. The plan is great.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing about that.
I was trying to figure out why she's trying to... I didn't really get at the beginning why she's going around, why she's trying to make sure nobody's following her. Because I was like, well, you want, obviously, the hand to follow you, so
not
yet. Story? But then I realized she needs to set up first.
Exactly. And so she does set up, and when she is on the way to the picnic after she set everything up, we get the song that we also hear in the movie, in the I Love You More Than Ice scream, which very cute, very, very sweet, this is something
taken
directly from the book. I appreciate that.
Also, it's not just that she went to set up. She also deliberately went to ask the missus, how is Hamish doing?
Yeah.
Because, you know, she is out there playing today and this little thing, this little key thing is
she's really obvious about
thing.
It. I love
And she's trying to lure the hand out, and I really, really love love that. And it almost bites her in the back.
Yeah.
Because Miss Spink is like, oh, beware of the old well. And she's like, oh, fuck.
Shut up.
So well. Shut up. It's like, oh, I have this key. Look at the key.
Shiny.
So good. And this is also the moment when Miss Spink tells her the old man's upstairs name is Mr. Bobo.
Or something.
And Coraline's like, oh my God, if I knew this before this, I would literally engage it into every single conversation that I can because that's such a great name. And I'm like, yes, girl, I'm with you.
So she goes to the picnic that she has planned and we get the mineshaft reference that we have in the movie. And so I had to look it up. And apparently that is an actual thing. So supposedly the old Romans used deep shafts to do astronomy. Because apparently if you are deep enough in a hole and have no reflection of light, then you, even in a clear day, get to see stars. I did not understand it because I was never really good at physics, but apparently this is a thing.
I mean, technically it kind of makes sense. I want to know more.
Apparently it is a thing. I did not understand it. It has to do with physics.
I love physics. Physics are great.
Well, then feel free to Google it and then at some point maybe teach our patrons about it. I did not understand half of it. But it is a thing that the ancient Romans supposedly did.
The guys were smart.
So I like that we get the mineshaft reference in the movie because it's taken from the book without any other like context, but that it is an actual thing.
Again, we are getting to a point where Coraline is executing a plan that is very calculated and thought through.
But she's also terrified that it might not work.
Yes. But she does what she can for it to work. So amazing. And I also had this, I got into this point where she is like trying to pretend that she's not seeing the hand coming closer. And I was like, well, you know, the hand is dumb because it's a hand. And then I was like, well, the hand couldn't hear her, could it? Because it's a hand.
But it's a magic hand.
Also, it couldn't see anything or the key because it's a hand. It doesn't have eyes. So yeah, then I just started running in circles around the fact that it's just a hand and how can it do all of these things when it's a hand? It can't hear her.
But it's a magic hand. This is why my hand is so fat, because it hears better than your hand.
It's actually an ear.
Exactly. It has an ear. Like, you know, the grasshoppers have ears on the side.
Oh, God.
So, yeah.
So it's a hand with ears.
Yes, exactly. So the hand shows up. It tries to grab the key. It falls down. Tumble, tumble, tumble. Coraline boards up the well again, which rightfully she should. Good girl. Mm-hmm. And then she goes back.
She gets... No, not yet. Before she goes back, so she puts the boards back up and the cat shows up for the first time in days.
Oh, I read over that. Okay, sorry.
She says, I haven't seen the cat since we came back days ago. And he literally gives her his approval to show her that she did well. That this is a good way.
That she did well with the well.
That the way she disposed of her hand was actually really handy. No, nothing.
Wow.
Thanks. At least that.
Mm-hmm. No. I couldn't react instantly because my mouth was full of tea. Because I joined the picnic and the tea party, you know?
Aww.
I'm just missing the
now
cake.
It's imaginary cake, so imagine.
Yeah, true. Sorry, I'm old. My imagination doesn't work as well.
So then she finally goes home and another seal of approval is the fact that the mice are suddenly saying that everything is fine.
All is good now. The mice say all is good now. We get told by Mr. Popinski. And did you notice he uses her right name?
Yes, because
I love that.
In the previous conversation, she corrects him again, and this time it finally comes through.
Yes.
And he doesn't really understand why she's named Coraline, but it got through.
Yes. It makes me really happy.
Yeah.
Because it is another one of these tiny steps that she manages to get herself heard in a way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that is another step in maturing.
Yeah.
And the next interaction is with Miss Spink, and Coraline hugs her very tightly when she returns the stone. And I really like both of these things. I really like that she returns the stone now that she doesn't need it anymore. Because who knows who might need it next?
Mm-hmm.
But I also really love that she hugs Miss Spink so tightly because of how much Miss Spink appreciates it.
Yeah. Very proud of her. So basically, now I believe that the matter is solved and there will never, ever, ever be any more troubles ever again.
I will not burst your bubble. And because this is a Gaiman story, we don't end with justice, but we end with her going to bed. And this is the last night before school. And all of this was the lead up of Coraline going to a new school, which is terrifying, which is scary, especially when you change during a time where everyone else already knows each other and you're the new one. That is terrifying.
Yeah.
But now...
I never experienced that.
I did. I nearly skipped the first day at my new school because it was the last day I wore glasses. Because the day after my first day at the new school, I finally got contact lenses and I nearly skipped the first day.
Oh my God.
Because kids suck.
Mm-hmm. They really do.
Coraline goes to bed and she is not nervous and she is not scared. Because why should she be? After all she went through, after all she experienced, what even is a new school and a new class? So that made me really, really happy.
Yeah.
And that is it. That is the book. Did you like it?
Dude, did I like it? I find the book so much scarier than the movie. The film does really good job adapting the book, but the flow in the book is better. I liked it better anyway. A lot of Coraline's decisions make a better sense and stuff. It just flows nicer. But in general, God, the writing. I have to admit something that I definitely never said on record ever before. Neil Gaiman is just so damn good.
And you didn't really read any of his before we started this podcast, right?
No, not really. Well, not at all, actually. I read the first two chapters of American Gods, and that's about it.
I'm so glad that we are doing this, because I have been obsessed with Neil's writing for so many years that it brings me a lot of joy that you have come over to the side of Gaiman.
Yeah. Do you know what? Maybe I would be much more comfortable if Beldam was a praying mantis. Yes. But the point of this story is that we shouldn't be comfortable and we should face our fears. Because if we do and overcome them, the gain is so much bigger. At least that's what I'm taking from this, among all the other quotes. So, you know, happy.
To me, while the movie is incredibly visually stunning and really, really well done, and I enjoy the soundtrack and everything, and I love the stop motion animation, I prefer the book over the movie in basically all regards. Yes, it is sad that there is no YB in the movie, because he is a great addition in the movie.
In the book.
And he is very much needed.
It is. He is. But unfortunately, and we've talked about this over and over.
I know.
The relationship between him and Coraline, regardless of which YB we're talking about, is not great.
No, but it is also very true to children in a certain way. So it makes sense. And also, I enjoyed our interpretation and depth for the parents in the movie a lot, and it is completely missing in the book. But still, the book gives me everything that I miss in the movie. And that is the depth and understanding for Coraline. Movie Coraline is sassy. Movie Coraline is strong and everything. But movie Coraline is not caring. And movie Coraline is not scared. And also I feel like movie Coraline doesn't grow as much. There is not as much evolution because we know so little about her and her inner workings. And I think it is in parts due to the stop motion animation, because we are missing a lot of micro expressions that an actor could have displayed. So we might have seen more of her inner workings without the dialogue and monologue that we get in the book, if it had been an actual human, because we relate easier to humans. But in the book, we get this depth and understanding and evolution and growth and everything of Coraline. And Coraline is so easy to relate to. It doesn't matter if you are an introvert or if you're an extrovert. It doesn't matter if you are a book child or an outdoor child. If you are a single child, if you have siblings, Coraline as a character is so easy to relate to. And this is, I think, why every single time I reread this book, it gives me something else and gives me more joy. And I find something that I missed before, or I find another interpretation or connection that I didn't see before. And then, of course, there is the simple fact that there are a few moments and stories and phrasings that it doesn't matter how many times I read them, they will still fucking make me cry every single time. The fucking story with the dad and the wasps and the moral of that story will never not bring me to tears.
It's just so beautiful.
Because it is not like a soul Neil Gaiman credit with the being brave does not mean not being scared. Being brave means being scared and still doing the right thing. Like, this is something that happens over and over in various stories. Like, be brave, live is a line from Buffy, because living is the hard thing, because you have to do the hard thing over and over again. And because you keep doing the hard thing, you are being brave. So it's not a singular new idea in any way or form, but the way he phrases it and he wraps it in Coraline just makes it speak to me so much more. And so the book simply works better for me. And I am glad that you enjoyed the book more than the movie in a way, because so do I. And the movie has its place, and I will keep recommending the movie to other people, but the book is the book.
Yeah.
And because I didn't give you an answer when we watched the movie, what is my favorite character? My favorite character is Coraline. But I can't say that when you haven't read the book.
I mean, can't you?
No, because movie Coraline would never be my favorite character. But with the knowledge of book Coraline, watching movie Coraline works a lot better, because I can infer her inner workings from the knowledge I have of book Coraline, and thus I have a much easier time liking movie Coraline, which I tried very hard to not let my knowledge and love for book Coraline bleed through while we talked about movie Coraline.
Do you know what's funny though? I found myself multiple times throughout reading the book, a lot of your unwilling notes that you have led throughout either recording the episodes on the movie or watching the movie when we did the live watch, when you let slip through certain words and things that they would come to me as I was reading the book when they were relevant.
I'm sorry.
So it's like, oh, that's why. Oh, okay, I see. And it was just, it's just this weird thing. It's like when you have this association, but like reversed. So like a random word would call in the whole situation that was happening on the page. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, I have a very hard time not doing that.
That doesn't ruin the enjoyment for me, I have to say. And you know, I know that we established that we're going to read the book first next time.
Yes.
But I want it to be known that this was a really fun journey for me, because coming into this basically completely blind, knowing nothing, period, was an interesting balance that we haven't gone through before. So, fun.
I need to be better when I know more than you. I need to hold back a bit more, which is something that is incredibly hard for me, but I shall grow as well, just like Coraline.
Aww. I think it's fine. I think you did a good job.
And I think we also, in the future, should find something where it's the other way around, where you know everything and I know nothing. Which is not going to happen with anything Gaiman, probably. But
I was going to say, maybe we should cover a Terry Pratchett book, like Mort, one of my favorite books.
But we need a book and a show or movie.
Okay, well, I mean, Hogfather is very long, but there is a double movie of it. It's very good. It has an amazing cast.
We're going to talk about potentials, and I am sure we will find something.
Listen, let's face it, I'm just here trying to convince you to read any Terry Pratchett at this point. Any Terry will do. If you want, I have a wide collection to choose from.
Isn't that a great closing statement? Any Terry will do.
Any Terry Pratchett. Oh my god, did I say it the wrong way? God damn it, she's gonna use it against me.
No, it was very obvious what you meant.
Good.
So this is it. This is Coraline the book. We have done it. We don't know if this was two or three episodes, because we never do when we record. Because as Vero said the last time, I think, we never shut up. And we won't be shutting up anytime soon. So when this comes out, we most likely will already have released information as to what our next project is going to be. We haven't finished our decision-making process, so as of now, we don't know. Because we record this much earlier than it actually comes out.
Listen, we have ideas.
Yes, that's ideas. That is exactly what we have. Please do stick with us and our ideas. And if you enjoyed our coverage of Coraline, both movie and book, or book and movie, if that is more your jam, let us know. Send us an email. Find us on our social medias. There are all the ways to reach out to us. And please do leave us an iTunes review if you can, because then more people can find us and listen to us not shutting up.
Also, if you want a blue sky code, I'm serious, please DM me. I have so many of them. And with that, we say thank you, and you will hear from us again if you tune in.
Bye!